running around in the woods naked in the rain and killing something with my bare hands and eating it raw. That's when Chaz said to Casey,
"So what's up with all that shit on your my site? Now you've got a picture of his nutsack."
Chaz hitchhiked his thumb at me. "Oh, great. Now everyone thinks they're my balls.
With a band-aid on it."
Of course. Sean Russell Flaherty's creative touch, no doubt.
"And all this shit about how much you love Ryan Dean West? And there must be about 50 pictures of Puss Boy on it, too."
It kind of choked me up that Chaz actually knew my name, and also that Shawnee had that many pictures of me. I hoped they were good ones.
"I don't know who the fuck has been doing that," Casey said.
I looked at Joey.
"You don't really love me, do you, Palmer?"
I said.
"Do you want me to kill you now or later?"
he answered.
Chaz bumped Kevin's good arm and said, "Give me another shot, Maxine."
Chaz downed the drink in one swallow and said,
"Damn, that stuff tastes terrible."
Okay, that was the precise moment. The wild boy took complete charge of my sensibilities as the pacifist was sleeping off a binge. I said,
"You should try it with a splash of Gatorade in it, Chaz."
Well, to be honest, I actually did say Gatorade, but I was thinking warm 4-day-old fermented puss boy piss.
He said, "You have Gatorade?"
"Only just a little."
"I'll try it. Thanks, Pusswing."
Wow, it was just like Christmas. I got another new hate name from Chaz, and I was about to watch him drink my pee. What could be better than that? Dear Puss Boy Ryan Dean, note to self. After I watched Chaz drink my piss, it would be a good time to fully commit to never kissing Megan Renshaw again, ever. Kevin began pouring.
"Leave some room on the arp,"
I said.
"What?"
Kevin asked. I realized I had grunted. Wild Boy had so taken control that I was losing the ability to express myself with the conventions of spoken language.
"Room. Leave some."
I took the shot glass from Kevin and chimped up to my bunk. I dug around for my Ryan Dean West emergency Gatorade bottle nighttime urinal and carefully uncapped it. In the name of all things holy, that piss stunk. I could almost feel the fetid gas cloud escaping from the mouth of the bottle and wafting like a moist cadaver's hand across my face. A quick splash, a speedy recapping, and I was back down on the floor, sweating in my loincloth, presenting Chaz with his drink.
"Gunga Din to the rescue," I said. "Does anyone ever know what the fuck you're talking about?"
Chaz said and took the glass from me. I watched. My sheet came unraveled and fell to my feet. I sat. Chaz drank.
"Oh, yeah. Take that, bitch."
He squinted, cocked his head, smacked his lips, and said,
"I think I like it better straight."
I looked at Joey, his mouth hung open. He'd looked like he was witnessing a beheading or something even grosser, like a beheading where the victim is forced to drink some other guy's 4-day-old fermented piss first. Because it dawned on me that I had told Joey about the Gatorade bottle when we were on the bus coming back to Pine Mountain from Salem.
"Fuck,"
Joey said. And I know he would have high-fived me, but he was too deeply repulsed. And he was probably afraid I had some piss on my hands besides.
"What?"
Chaz asked.
"Nothing."
And then Christmas came twice in the same day. Because Casey said,
"Let me try some with Gatorade in it too."
And that's when Joey honestly looked at me like I was a depraved serial killer, or I was going to die or something. But I didn't care because I was the grunting piss-in-your-drink wild boy of Bainbridge Island. I played it unintelligibly cool.
"I only have enough grade left for one shot. I was going to have it. Me."
I had become an ape.
Looking back, I am actually fairly surprised I didn't begin wildly sprouting hair from the vast acreage of hairlessness on my skinny bitch-ass body.
Fuck you, then, Casey said. I'm going all in.
I hadn't really been paying attention to the game, what with my jubilation over feeding Chaz some piss. But I figured I had a pair of fives, which in my two shots in a 152-pound sack of crap perspective looked pretty good. I called. And I also said, well, okay. I'll give it to you, Palmer. I monkeyed back up to my pissatorium and splashed a heavier dose for Casey. I heard Chaz say, I call, which meant that both of us had our entire stack in play, and one of us was definitely going to lose out and get the consequence, but not before that dickhead who busted my nose got his. I climbed down and handed Casey his drink.
No more Gatorade. Sorry, guys, I said. Casey got the last.
I was on top of the world as I watched Casey down that shot. Then he said,
that's pretty good.
And as he finished his shot of piss whiskey with a satisfied, piss-glistening smirk on his lips, the final card was turned. Casey busted us, and both Chaz and I lost out at exactly the same moment. Part 3. The Consequence. Chapter 67. That night became the stuff of legends. I didn't mind losing because I had already kicked ass on a monumental level. It was just like T-ball. Everyone got a trophy that night. The adrenaline surge that resulted from watching Chaz and Casey both fall victim to my depravity was nearly enough to counteract the effects of the whiskey, and even though I could tell I was feverish and sick, I felt like I could take on the world. I felt like hunting down J.P. Thoreau and crushing him, slowly and painfully. And I was happy that the whiskey bottle was empty. Joey knew better than to take another drink from the Maxine's House of Spirits in Atlanta shot glass slash bedpan, but Kevin had no idea what was going on, so it did present me with a kind of moral dilemma that I happily avoided, because even the wild boy of Bainbridge Island didn't want to see an okay guy like Kevin Cantrell get piss in his mouth the same week he'd been stabbed by a punk in a street brawl. By 1 in the morning, the game was over, and Casey won the $100 in the bank. But in his victory, there was an understated loss that only Joey and I knew about, at least right at that moment. And history was made because it was the first time ever that two guys lost out at the same time, which meant Chaz and I were going to suffer the crucible of the consequence together. This was a sobering thought, too, because the wild boy part of me began imagining the most horrible and disgusting things that Casey would dream up, involving me and a guy I hated as much as Chaz. But Casey was such an unskilled and unimaginative rookie at doling out consequences, and what he came up with hardly seemed that humiliating to me, although it did sound pretty risky. The flashlight turned off. The only light in our room came from the gray squares cut by the moon on the floor through our window panes. Casey tossed the 520s down on the cracked linoleum by my legs.
Halloween costumes, he said.
But I was already dressed up as Gandhi slash Wild Boy of Bainbridge Island, I thought. Well, I would be once I found where my sheet had gone off to in the dark.
What?
Chaz said.
I want you guys to go into town and get Halloween costumes for all of us, before school starts in the morning, Casey explained.
I gathered up the money.
Fun, I said.
Yeah, I was pretty damn stupid. But it's 25 miles, that's a long walk, I said. Can I at least put some clothes on first?
You're an idiot, Casey said.
Oh yeah, you drank my piss. I laughed out loud, then Joey cupped his hand over my mouth and whispered,
shut the fuck up, Ryan Dean.
Chaz has a car.
You have to sneak out and take his car. I don't care where you get them from, but you have to come back with costumes for all of us before first class in the morning, Casey said.
You can't make him do that, Joey said. Chaz is too drunk to drive. They'll get killed.
Oh, Joey, always sticking up for idiots like Chaz and losers like me.
I'm not too drunk, Chaz said.
Idiot. I knew I should have fought to stay in bed that night. I dug some sweatpants out from the closet and pulled them on. They had holes in them. A loser.
I'm driving then, Joey said.
He was sober. There's nothing that says I can't go along to keep them out of trouble.
And they better be good ones, too, Casey said.
I opened the window. There was no way I was going to try to sneak downstairs with Mrs. Singer on that floor. I sensed her Ryan Dean West radar was going strong. I put one leg out over the windowsill, and Chaz said,
Hey, puss boy, don't you think you should get on some socks and shoes and possibly a shirt?
Wow, all Wild Boy had on were sweatpants with holes in the crotch. No wonder I was covered in goosebumps.
Oh. You are the most fucked up, useless drunk I've ever known, Chaz said.
Whatever, piss breath. Chapter 68. We scrambled out into the dark and cold. Joey led the way along the trail by the lake to the mess hall, and then we turned up the path that cut between the dorms. I wore a black hooded sweatshirt that covered my head against the cold, but my whole pocked, ventilated sweatpants had become too short for me and rode up past my ankles, which made my socks look like bouncing, glow-in-the-dark, socks or something. When we passed the dorms, I looked up at the windows on the girls' building.
Oh, I whispered, Annie's up there, and Megan, and Isabel, and...
Yeah, I was going to list every girl I could possibly remember, hundreds of them, all so incredibly hot in their own ways. I pictured them all dressed differently in special sleeping outfits at a big massive slumber party where the Wild Boy of Bainbridge Island was the only guest present equipped with a set of XYs. But then Chaz said,
Shut up, dipshit.
We made it to Chaz's car. Luckily, nobody paid much attention to cars coming or leaving on a Sunday night, and technically, we wouldn't be considered AWOL until tomorrow morning anyway. But when Joey clicked the doors unlocked, Chaz looked across at me and said,
Leave the dipshit here, Joey. We can take care of this by ourselves.
And I thought that was a pretty goddamn good idea, considering Chaz thought it up. But then Joey said, I'm not going if Ryan Dean doesn't go.
Crap.
Chaz said,
Crap.
For the briefest of moments, Chaz Becker and I were of like mind. I opened the back door and crawled in. At least I could stretch my legs out across the seat. I kicked my shoes off. I wished Annie could come. That would be awesome. Just when we were about 5 miles away from the lights of Bannock, which was the only town close to Pine Mountain, and I was almost falling asleep, reclining sideways across the seats with my back against the car door, Chaz reached over from the front and grabbed my leg so hard he tore the inseam on my pants open all the way from my crotch to my knee. He said,
Now you're going to tell me everything about what's going on with you and Megan.
He must have been stewing about it for days now, and I can't say I didn't know this was coming. I'd seen how Megan and Chaz looked getting off that plane. I witnessed firsthand Megan's subtle teases about me in the back seat of that same car as we all drove back to school from our weekends. And honestly, my back was still bruised from when Chaz slammed me up against the soap dispenser the day he caught Megan rubbing her hand on my leg in the mess hall. But knowing all that still didn't lessen the adrenaline jolt of fear that shot through me. No matter how smart I thought I could be at a moment like that, I couldn't think of anything to tell him except the truth. Joey joked,
Don't make me pull this car over, boys.
Chaz wasn't loosening his grip. He wasn't smiling either. I swallowed. The pins came back to my throat. My voice cracked as I said,
What do you want to know, Chaz?
Joey tried changing the subject. I'm going to stop and get some coffee at the gas station here. You guys want some?
Yeah, I said. And I need to pee.
Me too, Joey said.
Chaz let go of my leg. Joey pulled the car into a mini-mart gas station. It was really quiet when he turned off the engine. Nobody moved.
Awkward.
We've kind of been fooling around, I said.
There, I said it. Finally.
I noticed that Joey had been just about to shoulder his door open, but he froze as soon as he heard my confession. It echoed like an empty church in that car. I don't think anyone so much as took a breath after I said it. And I know Joey was thinking about what he should do if Chaz jumped into the back seat and began murdering me on the spot.
We just kissed a few times. That's all.
Well, actually, it was exactly 24 times. But I felt justified in using the generic few, realizing that any number greater than never was as good as saying 24. I could see Joey's eyes in the rearview mirror. Then Chaz did something that nobody would have expected. He turned away from me and sighed. He actually looked like it hurt him to hear what I'd said.
"That's what she told me yesterday," he said. "I didn't believe her. I thought she was just screwing around with me. You know how Megan is. Why the fuck would you do something like that to a guy on your own team, Winger?"
"I don't know."
Okay. Why do teenagers use that answer so often, especially when we really do know? Of course I knew why I did it, and so did Chaz. And so would anyone else who ever looked one time at Megan Renshaw. Then I said, "We're not doing it anymore." I put my shoes on and opened my door.
"I'm going to pee," I said.
I heard Joey get out of the car behind me. Chaz stayed in the passenger seat. As I was rounding the corner to the men's room, Joey caught up to me.
"Damn, Ryan Dean, I think Chaz is crying," he said.
"Why am I such a punk, Joe?"
"I tried telling you," Joey said. "You want coffee?"
"Yeah, black."
Joey went inside the mini-mart and I went around back and peed in the bushes. I can't stand gas station men's rooms. I met Joey around front again, and he handed me two cups in paper sleeves. He held an elastic keychain wrapped around his wrist.
"You need a key for the toilets," he said.
"I peed in the trees."
Joey said,
"Oh, I'll be right back."
He went around the corner, and when I got back to the car, Chaz was gone. Chapter 69. We spent the next 15 minutes looking for Chaz around the gas station, even walking both directions away from it along the road, but we couldn't find any trace of him. It started raining again, so Joey and I went back to the car and sat.
"I don't know where he'd go," Joey said.
I had a good idea. Chaz was probably running around in the woods naked, looking for something to kill. Probably something that weighed exactly 152 pounds. I sighed.
"You really did make him drink pee tonight on top of everything else, didn't you?"
"Casey, too," I said.
"Damn.
Well, he's probably not heading back to PM. It's way too far." Joey looked at his wristwatch.
"It's a little after 2.
We can finish this costume hunt, and maybe we'll find him on the way back."
"I'm sure we will.
He's got to be around here somewhere, just sitting alone, cooling off. We might get back in time to sleep a couple of hours at least that way." I didn't really feel bad about anything I'd done, but I did feel sorry that Chaz was hurting over Megan, because I knew that feeling firsthand. But I tried to remind myself how stupid it was for me to feel sorry for a guy like Chaz. Still, the whole thing made me think about how crazy I was for Annie, and how JP was trying to do the same thing to me that I'd been doing to Chaz all along.
"Okay," I yawned.
Joey started the car, and we drove into Bannock.
"You don't need to say it, Joey. I know this is all my fault."
"It's not totally your fault, Ryan Dean," he said.
but you did let it go a little too far.
Yeah. My eyes scanned ahead. I saw the lights of an all-night grocery store. What grocery store wouldn't have costumes for sale just 4 days before Halloween?
Hey, Joey, I said. Why don't you have a boyfriend or anything?
What makes you think I don't?
Well, no one ever sees you with anyone at school. I mean, not like that, I said.
I wouldn't do that at school. It would be too much trouble for both of us.
Oh, so you do have a boyfriend?
Of course.
Well, I'm glad for you then.
It sucks being alone, believe me, I know.
Let's try this store, I said, and pointed to the supermarket.
I really didn't want to find out too much about Joey's boyfriend because it made me feel really awkward. I just wanted to know if Joey was okay in his life because, like I said, I really liked Joey. But I do mean that in a totally non-gay way.
Joey pulled into the parking lot. It was nearly empty, dark, and rain-slicked, with a few scattered shopping carts reflecting the headlights from Chaz's car.
Are there even any other gay guys at Pine Mountain? I asked.
Joey laughed.
Oh, my God, Ryan Dean, why do you care?
You're not curious, are you?
Did Chaz completely scare you off girls or something? 'Cause I wouldn't believe that could ever happen.
I shrugged.
No, I was just wondering. 'Cause I can't tell, I mean, I would never have even thought you were gay except you told me. But I do know exactly how many 14-year-old juniors there are at Pine Mountain. One. And he's a skinny-ass loser, but he's not gay.
Well, there are a lot of gay kids at Pine Mountain.
Hopefully J.P. Thoreau, I said. That would be awesome. Then I wouldn't have to worry about anything.
Joey laughed out loud.
You know, you and Kevin are like the only straight guys who've ever talked to me, about this stuff, who weren't trying to play some kind of fucked-up game, Ryan Dean.
Well, why not? You're my friend. You're probably the best guy friend I have.
But I don't think I could ever be gay.
Everyone knows you're not gay, Joey said, and I thought,
phew, that's a relief. Just in case Joey was wondering if I was gay and trying to make, well, gay small talk, and then I thought, damn, that was a screwed up thing to think about my best friend.
But you want to know something crazy? And you can't say anything to anyone about this, Ryan Dean. You know who's been seriously trying to hit on me ever since school ended last year? Ever since I came out to everyone?
And then Joey paused to see if I would make a guess, which I would have said Sean Russell Flaherty just because he's so, well, not like other guys. But Joey said,
Casey Palmer. Can you believe it? Casey fucking Palmer is gay. That's why he begged Chaz to get in the game with us tonight. He won't leave me alone. He fucking scares me. He's so hopped up about getting with me.
Wow. That was a monumental secret. A career builder for a guy like Shawnee Flaherty. If Shawnee kept such records, he would easily call that piece of info 5 out of 5 J. Edgar Hoovers and off-the-shoulder sundresses on the Sean Russell Flaherty Ruin Your Life rating scale.
Casey Palmer is gay?
I'm pretty sure he wasn't hitting on me because he thought I was a girl, Joey said.
Casey Palmer is gay?
I said again.
Then I doubled over laughing. Remember, Joey said, you are not going to say anything, okay? You know, football and everything. He's a piece of shit, but leave him alone about it.
I pissed in his drink, I said. A lot. And the idiot thought it tasted good, too.
Yeah. You've got balls, Ryan Dean. Except for when it comes to girls.
Well, he deserved it. He busted my nose.
Then Joey stepped out of the car and said, come on, let's get some Halloween crap and get the fuck out of here. And as I followed Joey into the store, I kept asking him,
what do you mean, except for when it comes to girls?
But he just said, never mind.
Chapter 70. In less than 30 minutes, we paid for 5 Halloween costumes, 2 tall cans of energy soda. I believed one of us was going to puke before we got back, and I hoped it would end up on Chaz's leather upholstery, and some cold medicine and throat lozenges for me. I opened the box of cold pills before we were out of the store and popped 3 of them into my mouth. I washed them down with the energy drink. So, yeah, between the whiskey, the cold pills, the energy drink, cherry menthol, is there anything that tastes more unnaturally disgusting, throat lozenges, and the pumped-up, rushed feeling from completely ruining Chaz Becker's life, I was pretty much prepared to have some kind of 70s Grateful Dead flashback, only it was 20 years before I was born, experience. We found some passable costumes for the 5 of us who played the game that night, too, even though I tried to convince Joey not to get one for Chaz. And that way he could be the Invisible Man. But Joey said that wasn't funny because if we didn't find Chaz and he got into trouble or something, it would look like we'd stolen his car and ditched him. Here's what we ended up with, in alphabetical order. Becker, Charles. Well, we found Chaz a Superman cape. But there was nothing to go with it. Fortunately, the supermarket sold kids' underwear, and we bought him a 3-pack of boys' size XL briefs with Pokemon characters on them. Then, we also got him some red women's pantyhose to go underneath the briefs. So basically, Chaz's most horrible night in his life had just gotten worse. Oh well, that's what he gets for leaving me and Joey alone and trusting us to be in charge of his future. Cantrell, Kevin. Kevin would be the token pirate. We found him a hat, an eye patch, and a plastic hook we thought would look perfect, sticking out from his black arm sling. Cosentino, Joseph. Joey got the cool costume. Prison stripes from Alcatraz, a fitting outfit for someone who was spending his senior year in O'Hall. Palmer, Casey. Casey lucked out in a big way. We chose one of those plastic face masks of Wonder Woman, and a golden lasso rope accessory for the guy with the serious case of the hots for Joey. We could have been much, much crueler, and even Joey admitted that he thought Casey would be jealous because Chaz's costume was so much gayer. Of course, I had to laugh about that. West, Ryan Dean. A discovery of true Zen-like perfection. I got a leopard-spotted caveman loincloth kind of thing, that had one suspender strap that tied in a knot over the shoulder. The wild boy of Bainbridge Island would be in full effect on Thursday night in O'Hall. Score. The O'Hall boys were not allowed to go to the dance with Pine Mountain's good boys and girls, but that would not stop us from dressing up and having our own Halloween. We left the store with our bags of goods, determined to seek out Chaz's hiding place, and get back to Pine Mountain in time to scrounge at least 3 hours of sleep before class. But it wasn't going to turn out to be that easy. Just as Joey opened his door, a voice came from the darkness in the lot behind the car.
"Can I talk to you boys a minute?"
And my juvenile delinquent from Boston self instantly thought, great, it's a cop. A man cop, no less, to make things even worse. But when I turned around, I realized that unless the Bannock Police Department hired 100-year-old officers who got around with walkers, we were pretty safe. And even if they did, I thought, I knew it would be easy enough to talk Joey into making a run for it. Or a brisk walk, for that matter. The old man came out of the rain at the speed of a newborn glacier, taking 2 steps, then lifting the walker, then setting it down, then 2 steps, lift. Set. I rubbed my chin to see how much that one whisker had grown in the time it took for him to get to Joey's side of the car. And why does Joey always have to be so goddamn nice and understanding? Joey said, "Leave us alone and go to hell, fucking crusty old man." Well, to be honest, Joey didn't actually say that. I think I was wishing it so hard I actually imagined it, which was the girliest thing I've probably ever done in my life. He actually just said, "Sure." 2 steps, lift, set. I needed a shave. And the poor guy looked terrible. He had a dirty white beard,
and just kept his eyes fixed ahead, staring at me and Joey as he two-stepped, lifted, set, inch by inch, wearing what looked like rain-soaked and food-stained pajamas.
"Can you boys please give me a ride home? I'll pay you," he said.
"Please, for once in your life, don't be nice, Joey." "What are you doing out here?" Joey said.
"I just went for a walk," he said.
And I thought either he lives about 12 feet away from here, or he started his walk during the Reagan administration.
"And then I got caught in this damned rain."
"Where do you live?" Joey asked.
"No."
But it was too late. I knew Joey and I were both helplessly being sucked into a black hole of Joey Cosentino's niceness.
"I live in a residential group home for child molesters who kill teenage boys with hatchets," he said.
Okay, I'll be honest. I think the whiskey, cold medicine, energy, soda, disgusting cherry menthol throat lozenge, lack of sleep effect was taking its toll on me. What he really said was something like,
"I live in Bannock on Battle Point Lane. It's about 2 miles from here."
"We could call you a cab," I said. I held the remainder of the poker bank out in my hand. "We'll even pay for it." "Nah," Joey said. "Come on. We'll take you home." Good old perfect Joey. God damn it.
"Thank you," he said. "Thank you, boys, so much."
I just hoped he killed Joey first. We loaded the old man's walker and our bags into the back of Chaz's SUV, then helped him up into the passenger seat beside Joey. I sat in the back and hunted around for something that could be used as a weapon. "Joey," I said from the back seat as he started the car.
"What?"
"Why are my pants ripped all the way down and my underwear hanging out?"
"Remember, Chaz?"
No. That cold medicine was the shit.
"Maybe you should go to sleep, Ryan Dean."
"Why are we driving Chaz's car without him?"
"I'll tell you about it tomorrow."
"You're the best, Joey." Joey shook his head. When we came to the entrance to the parking lot, the old man pointed him to turn right. Then he patted Joey on the shoulder and said,
"Thanks again. You're going to take a right up here at Haley Street. By the way, my name is Ned."
And then Ned dug around in his pocket and said,
"How much do you want for the cab ride, boys?"
"You don't need to pay us," Joey said. I closed my eyes and lay down across the seat. Then I felt the car turn right and begin lurching forward along a bumpy, unpaved road.
"This is Battle Point," Joey said. "How far up here do you live?"
Then I knew we were completely hosed. Ned said,
"Where?"
It began pouring. Joey said, "Is this your street?" And Ned said,
"I live in Waterloo, Iowa."
Oh, yeah. Me and Joey, both total losers. So I said, "Ned, will you please kill Joey first? He really, really deserves it." Chapter 71. So there we were in the middle of the fucking night, in the rain, on an unlighted dirt, make that mud road, somewhere between Oregon and Bulger 9 in the 8th circle of hell, with an axe-wielding sodomist and a walker who thought he was in Waterloo goddamned Iowa. Good times. Ned stared blankly out the windshield.
"I don't remember any of this in Waterloo."
"Oh, that Waterloo," I said.
So, Ned, was Napoleon really as short as everyone says?
What?
Ned said. Then he pointed out the window in front of Joey.
I think you took a wrong turn, son. Where's the Cedar River from here?
We're in the middle of it, Ned, I said. Joey stopped the car, right there in the middle of the river of mud that used to be a road. Not that we were running the risk of blocking any traffic, that is, unless salmon used this fucking road to spawn on. Spawning salmon. Ah, made me think of Annie. God, I'd never see her again. I felt like I would start crying, but I became determined that I had to live so I could stop JP from depositing his genetically inferior milt all over her. But you remembered this road and how to get here, Joey said, and how far it was. Are you sure you didn't want to come to Battle Point Lane?
Is this Battle Point Lane?
Ned asked. Yes, Joey said.
Are we in Waterloo?
Ned asked.
My son lives there.
Catch and release, Joey, I said. Let's put him back where we found him. Maybe he'll recognize his house if we find one up there. Joey nodded his chin in the direction of the road torrent. I didn't see any houses up there. Maybe he'll remember the spot where he hid all the bodies of the other kids he tricked into taking him here, I said.
What?
Ned said. Brian Dean. Joey looked over his shoulder at me. I really think you should try to go to sleep. He sounded a little stressed. Joey started the car forward slowly. I said, Here, Joe. Do you want a cough drop? I dropped one of the paper-wrapped lozenges in his hand. Thanks, he said. Don't thank me. They taste like crap, but they keep you awake. Then stop eating them.
I think it's just up ahead,
Ned said. That's exactly when the driver's side of the car lurched downward sharply, and the axle struck against something hard with a grating metallic clang. We were in a hole up to the top of the car's wheels. Joey tried backing the SUV out, but we were stuck. Oh, yeah, and that's when the water started coming in through the bottom of Joey's door, too. Fuck, Joey said. Don't give him any ideas, I warned.
This isn't the place, Ned said. I'm sure of it.
And that's probably about the time that Joey seriously considered throwing the old man out, too. If it wasn't precisely at that moment, I'm sure he felt like it when Ned started screaming insanely in wild terror. You know, there is something especially frightening when you're stuck in the darkest depths of hell in the middle of a raging torrent of mud, and the insane old lost guy in the front seat starts screaming like he's going to die. I mean, I figured Ned had probably stared death in the face more than a few times in just the past 4 or 5 hours, let alone since the discovery of fire. So when you hear a guy who you know has gone through as much shit as Ned has, in a lifetime that was undoubtedly measured by geological periods as opposed to calendars, screaming like that, well, you know, you're just going to die too. Fuck! Joey said again.
Ah!
Ned shrieked. Oh, yeah, fun times. Honestly, though, I have to admit to the selfish pleasure I took in the fact that the water was pouring in on the two fuckers in the front seat and not on the guy in the back, who never would have come up to Ned's abattoir for adolescent boys if Joey wasn't so goddamned nice all the time. Then Ned added something extra special to his scream. It kind of went like this. Which I think was probably Mrs. Singer's first name. But anyway, the blood-curdling sound was so unnerving that I screamed too, and just like a girl, which didn't make Joey very happy. Fuck, Joey said, and when I screamed, it made Ned scream even more insanely. I began laughing so hard I was actually crying,
which probably had something to do with the fact that I knew we were going to die, and now I decided I didn't want Ned to kill Joey first because watching him do it would scare the shit out of me. Ned shrieked again. It was a good one, too. Probably a solid 15 seconds. And it was so high-pitched that I'm pretty sure a pod or two of migrating gray whales in the Pacific veered off course for a minute, paused and looked around, and knew exactly where that 150-year-old asshole was, even if Joey and I didn't have a fucking clue. I laughed so hard, I thought I was going to throw up. "What's so fucking funny?" Joey said. I could hear the wheels spinning uselessly in the muddy water outside, and the splashing, soothing fountain sounds of Joey's and the insane guy's feet up front. Then all I could hear was another scream. If I wasn't laughing so hard, I probably would have beat Ned with his walker. "I'm sorry, Joey," I laughed. "Now I can finally say I told you so." I paused. "Bitch." That's technically not cussing. I laughed. Ned shrieked and wailed. Joey said, "Fuck." "Okay, Joe, I'll get out and see if there's anything I can put under the wheels to get some grip."
"But you're sick, Ryan Dean."
"Dude, Joey," I said, scream.
"Believe me, there's nothing I want more than to get out of this car right now."
I opened my door and looked down. The water rushed past the car's running board so fast it looked like we were in a motorboat or something. I could see how the back wheels were spinning uselessly, kicking back rooster tails of mud in the dark. I knew I'd end up getting soaked, which wasn't a good idea, so I slipped off my socks and shoes and left them on the car seat. Then I pulled up the legs of my sweatpants as high as I could and stepped out into the cold and muddy flow. Ned screamed again. Damn, he had quite a set of pipes for an old guy. I waded around to the back of the SUV, already wet up to my waist. I yelled up to Joey, "Stop gunning it! I'm going to look for something to wedge under the wheels." Ned gave me an approving, "Ah!" I paused. I slogged up to Joey's window and knocked on it. The water was streaming into the rip in my sweats, pulling them away like a drift net. I hoped Salmon didn't bite. I knocked on Joey's window again. He lowered it halfway. "Joey!" I said. Ned screamed, and Joey tensed and closed his eyes like it physically hurt him. "Suppose I had a gun with only one bullet in it, and I gave it to you. Would you shoot Ned, me, or yourself?" I laughed. Life doesn't present a guy with too many the lady or the tiger kinds of lessons. Joey flipped me off and raised his window. Ned wailed. Through the open back door, I heard Joey say, "Fuck!" It sounded kind of nice. It lifted my spirits. I waded away. I actually considered momentarily just leaving Joey and screaming Ned there so I could become the wild boy of the eighth circle of hell. But I did want to get back to Pine Mountain and Annie and a certain kid of French descent whose dreams still needed some serious crushing. And besides, we had another rugby game coming up that week, and the team would never be able to get by without Kevin, our winger, and our starting fly half. When I got out of the creek we were stuck in, I found enough fallen tree bark and rocks to begin making sufficient braces all around the rear wheels. On the first trip back to the car, though, I fell down in the river, so I took my hoodie off and tossed it into the back seat with my shoes and socks. No sense getting everything I owned soaked and muddy. I knew it was stupid because I was sick, but I figured I'd be able to scrounge up something dry to wear among our new Halloween costumes. Everything looked ready to go. I waded to the car and told Joey to try backing out, and that I'd stand away and watch. Before I closed my door, Ned screamed again, and then I said, "And Joey, we're either going back to the store or I'm not getting in this car ever again. It'll be you and Ned alone." Joey didn't say anything. I closed the back door and walked over to the side of the mud road. The rain slowed to a drizzle, but the level of the creek didn't change at all. The SUV's reverse lights came on. Slowly, shakily, Joey got Chaz's car unstuck.
He backed it up to the side of the road where I was waiting for him. I got in the back seat, dripping and shivering. It was 3 in the morning. Chapter 72. Ned stopped screaming when we got back to the store. Joey didn't say a word the whole way there, and I just sat in the back seat with my arms hugged across my bare chest, smiling all the time because of how stupid we were for trying to do a good deed for a lunatic like Ned. The worst part of the whole experience, no, wait, it wasn't the worst part, because being stuck in the car with screaming Ned was worse, and something even worse than that still was going to happen to me before the night was over. So okay, a pretty screwed-up part of the whole experience happened when we took Ned back to the store. I guess I truly did look like the wild boy of the 8th circle of hell, because I was soaked and covered in mud, barefoot and shirtless, with my boxers hanging out from a gaping hole in my torn sweatpants that were pulled up past my bony kneecaps. And the store manager laughed at us when we offered to pay for a cab for the old fucker. He asked us if Screaming Ned had played his old funny trick again, where he'd take foolish do-gooders out to the middle of the forest and scare the living shit out of them. And we said, no? Oh, yeah. He said Screaming Ned was a regular fucking celebrity in Bannock. And the manager laughed at us and walked Ned 2 steps, lift, set, 2 steps, lift, set. Next door to the donut shop owned by Screaming Ned's fucking alcoholic son, who had been sleeping behind the counter while Ned did his performance art on me and Joey. Yeah, I don't think Joey would have even batted an eye if I told him I was going to throw a shopping cart through the window of that goddamn donut shop. When we left, I got into the back seat again. Joey said, "The water's all gone from up front, Ryan Dean. You can sit up here." I need to get some dry clothes on, Joey, and there was no way I was about to get undressed in front of Screaming Ned. I'm going to break down and do it, Joey. I'm freezing, and I'm going to put on some of those Pokemon briefs. Now, that was the worst part of the whole Screaming Ned episode. Anyway, it was a 3-pack, and I was pretty sure Chaz wouldn't count to see if one was missing. "Joey," I said as he started the car, finally, along on its way out of the parking lot, "please turn up the heater. And by the way, I've never been completely naked in a car alone with a gay guy before." There was this raw meat-sucking sound as I tore my sweats and boxers down over my feet. Joey laughed. "Neither have I. But, Ryan Dean, don't try on the pantyhose." Joey? "Wasn't going to, ass." Joey laughed. I pulled on my dry socks. It was really weird. Those Pokemon briefs were surprisingly comfortable. And I hadn't worn briefs since I was in, like, 3rd grade. I put on Joey's convict pants, pulled on my hoodie, and climbed up into the front seat beside Joey just as we came to the gas station where we'd lost Chaz earlier. "I feel a lot better," I said. "I swear I won't wreck your prison pants. I swear to God I won't pick up any more psychos." "Does that mean we aren't going back to look for Chaz?" We found Chaz Becker, walking along the road toward Pine Mountain. He was wearing one of those big plastic yard leaf bags. He must have gotten it from a sympathetic gas station clerk, and he kind of looked like a big reflective black ghost when we passed him. Joey slammed on the brakes and backed the car up right on the highway until Chaz lifted his down-turned head and saw it was us. I started to climb over to the back seat, but Joey grabbed my hood and pulled me back, saying, "No way. I do not want to sit by him, Ryan Dean. Let him sit there." The next thing I knew, Chaz was tearing off his garbage bag rain slicker and getting into the back seat. "You guys are assholes," Chaz said. "I was almost going to call the cops and say you stole my fucking car, pricks." "We tried to find you, Chaz," Joey said. "You took off. It wasn't our fault.
I was staying out of it entirely, but after a few seconds, Chaz said,
Well, fuck you anyway, Winger. I still don't think we're settled about this.
I just looked at Joey, but I didn't say anything. But at that moment, I knew I was going to stay away from Megan Renshaw, even if I also knew how difficult she could make keeping that commitment. And hell, I knew how weak I was, too. And I don't mind admitting it. I sighed. I just had to think about Annie. It had been such an incredibly long day that started way back when she came into my room while I was still in bed and we went running in the rain together on Bainbridge Island. Then, all of a sudden, Chaz threw my soggy sweatpants and boxers onto the dashboard in front of me, which kind of made Joey swerve the car because it startled him. It sounded like a rump roast being dropped onto a basketball court. Chaz leaned over from the back seat and looked at me.
Are you naked? What the hell were you two homos doing in my car back here?
Then we had to tell him the whole story. Well, to be honest, Joey told it to him, because I was shutting up for the rest of the night. And it wasn't really the whole story, either. Joey told him about the costumes and then how we picked up Screaming Ned, but he wisely left out the part about getting Chaz's car stuck in a fucking flash flood. He just said it fell in a creek when I was helping Ned get to his house. So Chaz said,
What a total do-gooder dipshit.
And I left it at that. But I made him drink pee. And I made out with his smoking hot girlfriend, too. Somehow, miraculously, we made it back to O'Hall, and I was finally in bed. Although I was sharing my accommodations with a now lighter bottle of urine, which made me think, as far as a bottle of piss is concerned, are you more of an optimist if you think it's half empty? And a still unopened FedEx mailer of condoms and porn from my mom. I was completely, irreversibly asleep by 5 o'clock. Chapter 73. You know, there is something tragically disappointing in 2 hours sleep after an epic night like that. So when the alarm went off at 7, I dreamed I was back in that car, stuck in the river, sitting behind Screaming Ned as he sharpened his meat cleavers. Chaz wasn't in too much of a hurry to get up and hit the snooze button either, and when I did finally stumble down from the top bunk, I couldn't figure out how to turn the goddamn thing off. So I just yanked the plug from the wall. But it was one of those clocks with a battery backup, since we lose power so much in that old dorm, and it kept screaming netting at me. So I put it under my pillow. Think about Annie. Think about Annie. I wanted to stay in bed so bad. I knew I was horribly sick from all the crap I'd been through in the past 24 hours, but I had to force myself to think about Annie Altman. Because I knew I had to get in JP's way as much as I possibly could for the next 3 days before Halloween. So I had to make myself go to school. I left a groaning Chaz Becker and the door open behind me and stumbled down the hallway toward the showers, dragging my towel along the floor at my feet with my eyes crusted over and half closed. I saw Mr. Farrow standing at his doorway. He cocked his head toward me, kind of like a cat who'd been sprayed in the face with a squirt gun. Then I saw a couple guys coming out of the bathroom, and one of them pointed and started laughing at me. I looked down. Oh, yeah. Pokemon. Briefs. Crap. I am such a loser. What could I do? I looked at the guys straight on. I kept walking toward the showers. I said, Oh, yeah, admit it. You know you want some of these bad boys. Chapter 74. But I missed Annie at breakfast, and I barely made it to conditioning class on time, having to run and attempt to tie a necktie with shaking hands the whole way from O'Hall to the athletics complex. I was a mess. That day, getting through my world was like trying to swim in a pool of warm mayonnaise,
while carrying two bowling balls. I just had to keep telling myself I could do it, but I had a hard time convincing the tired and sick Ryan Dean West. I knew ahead of time that I wasn't going to say anything to Shawnee about what I'd done the night before. As great as the story was, I'd have to keep all those things bottled up. How I'd gotten drunk again and made Chaz and Casey drink my piss, the drive into Bannock, and how Chaz started crying and ran away when he found out I'd been making out with his girlfriend, learning about how Casey was gay and had been hitting on Joey, getting our Halloween costumes, and of course, the lunatic screaming Ned, and hope I didn't explode from not being able to tell. Because most of it just wasn't the kind of stuff I'd want everyone in the whole world finding out about on some new perverted website designed by our demented scrum half. I had to run in regular tennis shoes in conditioning class because of what I'd done with my running flats on Bainbridge Island the day before. God, I could not believe that only 24 hours had passed since I tore my clothes off in the rain during that run with Annie. Hopefully my mom would get those new shoes to me by the afternoon, even if she was probably still crying about my growing up, getting taller, having sex, and whatever else she imagined that wasn't really happening to me. We were sent out on the 3-mile lake run, and this time I decided I was going to stay right there with Shawnee and JP. No matter what, I wasn't going to let JP try to get between me and Shawnee, too. Even if they were roommates and we did hate each other, I was going to stay friends with Shawnee Flaherty. We ran 3 across with Shawnee in the middle of us, slowly, in the back of the pack. It stopped raining, and our legs were splattered with mud to our thighs. I thought if I talked to Shawnee the whole way, even about stupid stuff, it would shut JP up and make him mad at the same time.
"Hey, Nutsack, did you guys play cards last night?" Shawnee asked.
"Yeah."
"Well, did you win? Did you lose? Did you get drunk? What happened?"
"I'm not saying, Shawnee."
"Dude, one of these days all you guys are going to get thrown out of school for that shit."
"Oh, tough break, throwing me out of O'Hall," I said. "Casey Palmer played with us."
Have you ever noticed how when you're going into a conversation and you tell yourself ahead of time, "Do not say anything about X," your mouth will almost automatically start spilling its guts about X before you can do anything to stop it? So, I kind of felt my stupid hungover cherry menthol mouth beginning to say, "And Casey Palmer is gay and won't stop chasing after Joey." But just in the nick of time, steered clear of it and said, "And Casey Palmer won."
"Why'd you play with that asshole?"
I shrugged. "Shut up, Ryan Dean."
"Hey, by the way," Shawnee said, "did I tell you? I'm taking Isabel to the dance."
"Nice," I said.
Why the hell did he have to bring that up?
"Isabel's hot,
if you happen to have a thing for girls with faint mustaches."
"You think every girl is hot. Didn't you get any of that pent-up sexual frustration out of your system at Annie's house over the weekend?"
If anything, the weekend made it worse. I sighed, picturing Annie and me pressed up against that painted wall in the sawmill. Then I took a dig at JP.
"I sure did."
Shawnee high-fived me. But that was all I was going to say, because if I said anything about fooling around with her in the hot tub, or making out at the sawmill and in the airport, or how she woke me up both mornings, God, just thinking about it was making me crazy. I knew they'd both go straight to Annie and tell her what I'd said. I coughed. Shawnee said,
"I saw Annie this morning. She said you got sick from running in the woods naked in the rain. Did you really do that?"
Well, I wasn't completely naked, but I'd take another shot over JP's bow. I laughed.
"Yeah.
Damn.
I'm not going to be at practice today," I said. "I'm going to get my stitches out this afternoon."
I could feel JP peering around Shawnee to look at me. Shawnee said,
"Go in there extra muddy, and maybe that hottie nurse will give you another sponge bath."
My luck, Dr. No Gloves will want to check out my nuts again.
Just tell him all he has to do is look at Casey Palmer's website. Shawnee laughed.
Yeah, very funny, Shawnee. I heard about that. Trouble is, he's seen mine in real life. So he'd know that those baby ones in your picture are so small they could only belong to Sean Russell Flaherty.
I shoved him, and he came within a hair's breadth of crashing into JP. Ouch. Good one, Shawnee said.
Watch it, fucker.
JP almost tripped, avoiding Shawnee. I had no doubt he was pissed off at me now. I was pretty sure the whole class had passed us by that time. I saw them all running back from the turnaround in the opposite direction. I stopped at the turn and folded my hands together on top of my head, then gave JP a dirty look. I'll admit it, I felt like fighting him.
Something wrong? I said to him.
You almost knocked Shawnee into me, JP said.
Fuck you, Ryan Dean. I know what you're trying to do.
I kept my hands on my head, but I stepped right up to him. I know that was stupid. JP could kill me. He was a good 4 inches taller. And yeah, I did cuss, but there is nothing else a guy can do at a time like that.
No. Fuck you, JP.
I know. Not a very good comeback. Then I said,
what the hell do you think you're doing asking Annie out? Aren't there enough girls here who'd go out with you so you wouldn't have to fuck over one of your former best friends?
I'd been saving that up for about a week, and it sure felt good to get it out. Just like it was going to feel to get those stitches out, I thought, if I lived until the afternoon. Shawnee said, hey, come on, stop it. Let's just run, guys. Too late. I let go of my hands and dropped them in front of my chest and shoved JP back toward the water's edge. He came right back at me and threw a hellacious punch with his right fist, but his foot slipped away in the mud beneath him, so what would probably have knocked me out cold ended up glancing off my left rib cage. It hurt bad enough, though. In fact, I was pretty sure it cracked a rib. But I turned with JP's punch and cocked a straight right fist and fired it square into his nose. JP's head snapped back and purple blood sprayed from beneath my knuckles as he lost his balance and fell backward, right into the muddy shallows of the lake. On the Ryan Dean West stimulus satisfaction scale of things, it was without a doubt one of the best physical sensations of my entire pathetic life. In fact, as I thought about it, punching that bastard was right up there in the top three. And hearing and seeing him splash down in all that cold black mud was almost as pleasing as punching him. Unfortunately, I knew he was going to get right back up.
What the fuck are you guys doing?
Shawnee, who was definitely not famous for his tackling ability, took me right down with a diving side tackle. He wrapped his hands around the collar of my sweatshirt, pinning my shoulders into the mud.
What the fuck, Ryan Dean?
I thought Shawnee was going to hit me too. In the years I'd known him, I never saw Shawnee so serious or mad about anything. From where I was pinned, I could look up and see JP stumbling out of the lake. He was soaked and filthy, and a mouth-wide streak of blood painted a line from his nose down across his shirt to the top of his shorts. He came over to Shawnee's side and tried to kick me. But Shawnee dove at JP's foot and took the force of his kick in his own collarbone.
Stop it, you fucking assholes! Shawnee yelled.
That kick had to hurt him, and I felt bad that he took it for me. Shawnee screamed at us,
you're going to get thrown off the team! You're going to get your asses thrown out of school!
When JP realized he'd kicked Shawnee, he backed away and turned around, pulling the bottom of his shirt up to stop the blood that streamed from his nose. Shawnee got off me and I stood up, but he stayed between me and JP, who bent forward and kept his back to me.
Okay, Shawnee, I said. Okay. I'm sorry, Shawnee. I didn't mean to get you in the middle of this crap. I'm a fucking idiot.
Yeah, I was mad. Then I turned around and ran back to the locker room. Chapter 75. It was so awkward spending the next 2 hours in classes with Megan.
She and Joey tried talking to me, but I didn't say anything. Joey looked tired, too. He understood. In calculus, I drew Joey a cartoon of screaming Ned, and he started to laugh so hard, I thought he was going to pee his pants. A dark and stormy night, somewhere in the eighth ring of hell.